Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. On this episode, we get to have David Frank, CEO of Stonehaven. My new friend. We had a hard time getting the podcast started today because we were having too much fun talking. David, for people who don't know what Stonehaven is, can you give us the overview?
Sure. So we're a platform for investment bankers and placement agents, and we help run all aspects of their infrastructure, technology, and data. We have 120 investment bankers and placement agents that operate on our platform, and we have a 30-person team supporting them. We are active in the market with about 250 mandates, so client relationships. We're active across capital raising, M&A, and secondaries, and that's pretty evenly split between placement agent activity, which is representing asset management firms of all types across private markets raising capital, as well as direct deals, so corporates from early to late stage, raising both equity and debt. And we've overall built a tech stack that our affiliates run their entire business in. We're the broker dealer for all the people on our platform. And we can dive into any more details you'd want to cover.
Yeah, I want to cover a lot. What do you think the total transaction value is over the life of Stonehaven that has gone through you guys?
Well, I know it. We're just about to cross $10 billion. So we've raised a decent amount of money.
Yeah, no kidding. Why don't we start there? You know, raising money is the show is, we have a lot of CEO founders and investment fund managers that listen, and this is a topic that never gets old. I'd love to hear, secrets for raising $10 billion. What's a fundraising tip that you think has really, maybe not just been like the off-the-cuff thing, but something that's really been a core value for you as you've seen people successful?
Gosh, there's a lot there. So just to kind of peel it back a level and kind of talk about how we fit into the entire equation, and maybe I'll give some context on how my career's evolved. So early, I started Stonehaven when I was 23. I'm 45 now, similar to you in age, a little older. And so I've been building the same firm for almost my entire career, except for 1 year doing investment banking at Roberts & Stevens. For the first 10 years or so of my career, I was directly in the marketplace executing on capital raises and other types of deals. And over time, started to build out execution teams to execute on everything from hedge funds, real estate, venture, private equity raises. And it was only in 2019 where we pivoted into becoming a pure play platform for other investment banks and placement agents to run their entire business. So we've essentially leveraged all of the, everything we've learned and built across our team to go support other people in capital raising. And I think as far as tips and tricks for raising money, I would start with kind of picking the right thing to raise money for in the first place. So I think that's where a lot of it starts. So I think that can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I think you have to have the right pedigree of team. You have to have, first of all, you can break it down between raising money for an asset management firm or a direct corporate. They're definitely different worlds, although there's a lot of overlap. But in both cases, identifying the right opportunities, the right first thing. I think next thing is identifying the right target market of investors or buyers for what you're doing. And I think with today's day and age, you can leverage so much data to really be super smart about targeting the right type of investors. We actually have built an open source data model on our platform where we have 75,000 investor profiles that all of our affiliates operate within that data set, help build it organically. And we have a data team as well that helps build it. And so we do everything we can to really make sure that everyone on our platform executing does so with the best data possible. And then I think the next step in being really successful at raising capital is you have to have your pitch down. And that has to be really refined before you start engaging with your first investors. So I'll put it in three different levels of type of pitch. I think quite often you need to be able to articulate what it is that you're representing and call it 60 to 120 seconds. So like a minute or two is all you get to basically break in the door. So you need to be incredibly articulate about what it is exactly that's the unique value proposition of that company and what differentiates it relative to the peers. It's an incredibly competitive marketplace. Anyone who has money has incredible access to deals. So just offering another Me Too product or company is not compelling. I think the second type of pitch you need to be able to orchestrate is call it a half hour deep dive. And that needs to be something that you're also really proficient in. And then last is you need to be able to answer the questions that are the tricky gotcha questions. And that's really what usually happens. Rarely do you get through a 30-minute pitch and get to go through that from top to bottom. Most investors are looking for reasons to kill things, not to invest. They, you know, investors might buy or invest in 1-3% of deals they look at. So from a time management perspective, most are more in the business of trying to weed out what they don't want to focus on so they can know what to focus on. So I think being able to overcome those objections and intelligently is incredibly important. I think you need to have brand credibility in the marketplace. So I think if you're raising capital, focusing in a specific area where you know all the players, you know the trends, you read and consume content voraciously, and you have a deep level of intellectual curiosity on the topics that you're focusing on, is just the entry point, the entry ticket for being even in the game to be successful. So I think there is a role for people who are generalists in raising money, but I think in today's world, there's just too much specialization that's required. There's some exceptions to that. Like, just to give you an example, you could be fantastic at raising real estate funds and deals, but also do deals in prop tech and venture. But that could come from the same source of knowledge of like deeply understanding a core market. And then from there, I think a lot of it comes down to organization and project management. So I think you need to be living in your CRM, your architecture, and managing your pipeline, next step dates, tracking all of your activity, taking great notes, following up the right time, the right way, consistently. And then I think in today's world, Zoom's become super convenient and you should leverage, you know, all the tools for doing virtual meetings. But I think getting in front of people face to face is also critical. So I think it's the right 1-2 punch of being efficient and doing a lot of things like we are today on a call, but also really getting out in the marketplace. Ironically, I think in this world post-COVID, a lot of conferences have actually become more important because people do so much of virtual meetings that they also really still go to industry conferences. So I think you need to have a real presence. I think when you're also look somebody up online, they need to have real brand credibility in the space. So I think that's pretty easy to determine within about 10 seconds of looking up somebody online. And so having that kind of profile is really important. Yeah, there's a lot we could double click on there, but those are some high level things I would say are just the basics of being in the market to sell.
Yeah, no, I think those are great. Let's ask a different question. In many ways, like, you know, you previously were doing more direct deals and now you've created this platform. What do you feel like you look at how quickly your platform is growing and that's the volume of transactions that you do. There's so many people that have tried to do something similar in some form and they're not around anymore. What do you think that is different about you and the way you're doing this that, I mean, like, let's face it, my investment banker buddies are pretty competitive dudes, right? And
sure.
Collaboration and cooperation, you know, we're known for a lot of lone wolves who think they're a big deal, right? And yet,
sure.
you've got a real community amongst these finance professionals. What do you think you're doing differently?
So I think we approached it differently. I mean, I started off as being more of an investment banker placement agent. And today, we're really running a platform that we sought out to build an entire operating system. And that's what's different. So I think there's plenty of broker-dealers out there who've built it. And we basically said, we are going to build one platform that's the base level infrastructure, tech stack, data model, et cetera, and community for all of these investment bankers and placement agents, which we call affiliate partners. I'll just use that term because it's easier. And so we said, we're not here to compete with them. We're there to enable them. And so we sought out to solve all the really big use cases that everyone in our market wanted to, you know, optimize. So that on the regulatory side, it was having a super clean broker-dealer with all the RegTech integration. So everything you want to do as a registered rep is super easy, three clicks and done. We also really sought to optimize the way people onboard mandates through contracting and due diligence, and built legal tech to streamline how to go straight from commercial terms to a fully baked contract with a clean workflow. And we've also then optimized how do you close transactions through all the compliance and financial workflows. We built it all in the same tech environment. So you never leave and go through from system to system to system to do it. And then sitting at the core of that is all CRM architecture. And then, so that's kind of the tech stack. And we've talked about the data model to a certain degree. And then the killer app, so to say, in our space is collaboration. So it's kind of a funny point you mentioned, Jess, how people are super competitive. People are competitive, but I think, our affiliates and other people in the marketplace do compete to go win deals. But once they brought a deal onto our platform, the amount of collaboration that goes on our platform is just prolific. So across our 250 clients right now, our affiliates come together and essentially form syndicates where one person originates a mandate and one or more people join as a participant. And when somebody does that, that's called a cross-marketing agreement. We have over 300 active cross-marketing agreements on our platform. We sign an average of one per business day. We did 8 last week as an example. And that's a very kind of normal week for us. And it takes a lot of things to pull that off. So it's taken having a common core. So having a really consistent architecture for compliance, legal due diligence, et cetera. So people know when they're onboarding or working on a mandate that they're working on a common core. 2 is having a common data model makes a huge difference because they really want to be able to collaborate real time. And we've enabled people on our platform when they come together and collaborate to have real time transparency on things like pipeline, activity, transaction data. Typically, when two people are investment bankers working at different firms and they seek to collaborate, everything's broken. It's all in Excel, it's spreadsheets, and it's held together with glue, and it really never functions well.
And then the data room needs its own like map of understanding what's on what tab and why that's not in the folder where you would think it would be. Anyways, go ahead.
Totally. Like, you know, data room, for example, we've sought out and built a really intricate mandate dashboard and all the workflows you'd want to discover, filter for things, understand the characteristics of mandates, join a cross-marketing agreement. All those things are really important kind of features to do it. And the other part that, stepping away from all the tech infrastructure, et cetera, is actually building a real community. So where people have real human-to-human relationships. And the way this started off was I was essentially the first collaborator on the platform. The reason this kind of happened in the first place was I was out originating, executing on deals and sought out to collaborate with other friends in the industry. And friends in the industry just said, hey, would love to work with you, but I'd also like to be able to originate other deals away from you. So, and by the way, I need a broker dealer. And so we started bringing people into our broker dealer with the main intention, this is over a decade ago, of running our own deals and forming syndicates around them of people that were friends of ours in the industry and then providing them a base level of infrastructure. And then it wasn't until much later that we said, hey, the real opportunity is not just us running our own mandates. Let's step away from that entirely, just be the hub of the entire architecture and then build community around it. And so we do a lot for that. Every single month, we host a call for our affiliates and roll out all the new mandates that go live. We give the opportunity for new people joining our community to speak. We roll out all the kind of new tech and other initiatives. And then every quarter, we also host community events per asset class. So we do an hour and a half per asset class for real estate, hedge funds, direct deals, closed-end funds, and for late-stage secondaries. And so we create an environment where people can talk about I'll just talk about what we're doing it right now. So we're at the beginning of this year, we're focusing on what are the investment themes per asset class, what are the best investment ideas, and how do the mandates that people already have in the market relate to those trends? And where are people seeking new opportunities that they haven't yet originated based on that? And they're sharing that with their community because people help each other all the time. In fact, people are really, a lot of bankers have lots of deal flow that isn't exactly what they'd want to do, or they want to originate things that are right in their wheelhouse and they want to attract other people to it. And so we've created a kind of a competitive environment to attract talent to mandates, which is great. So we onboarded 126 new mandates last year, and we're constantly, our affiliates are always reaching out to each other, trying to solicit involvement and then leveraging all of our core tech stack, et cetera. So we've really built it that way. So just to summarize it, I'd say it's building an operating system and that seeks to bring everyone together, and then really building a collaboration platform on top of it where people can collaborate.
So let's play some games here. So
sure.
Let's say that I'm like, oh my gosh, David's right. I should just do it his way. And yeah. I go get my 7 and 63 and you guys decide you like me enough to let me on the platform. And I bring a $500 million AI company who's like, oh, we really want to raise $30 million for this new division that can be like a partnership between the parent and the new investors. What does that process look like at that point?
So let's say this is your deal and you're an affiliate on our platform. So first step would be contracting. So you'd have to go determine what are the right commercial terms for you and that company to represent them. So our affiliates are typically within the normal range of kind of market-based terms. So let's say you figure out that contracting process, you initiate it through us, which we can get into those workflows. Then the next step would be due diligence. And our team helps assist our affiliates on doing that due diligence. We want to make sure everything from a downside perspective is figured out. So regulatory, legal issues, you want to make sure you're accurately representing that company in the marketplace, it's fair and balanced, et cetera. So once you have that, then there's a junction point where you're determining how much of this do you want to run yourself versus how much do you want to also solicit other people on our platform. So usually the most successful affiliates are great at doing both on our platform. So I would say the first thing you do is go right into our investor dashboard, filter for investors with a preference of VC, AI, Series B, C, D kind of stages. And you'd probably find, I don't know, 400 or 500 investors that are in that category. It's a very kind of big lane of activity right now. And I think the question for you then is, where do I have the right connectivity to cover those investors based on my prior activity? Where might I want to break into those new relationships, et cetera? And then it'd be really rolling it out to our platform. So you would have a deal announcement. You'd probably have the CEO come speak on our monthly affiliate partner call. And you could easily jump into our community page and say, which are the affiliates that are talented at venture capital, direct deals, who might have experience in AI or other kind of similar sectors. And let's just say there's 5 of those or 10 of those bankers within our platform. And so that point is just a reach out. And if they haven't already looked at the deal, and to really open those doors, figure out what's the right economic split between you and those other affiliates. And then the next step is typically getting an investor list approved with the AI company. So you would form a set of investors that you want to approach yourself and with others on the platform. You'd submit them for approval to the client. And you'd have to be really ready to discuss why are those the right target investors. They might also already have some of those investors in their cap stack, which you should already know about because that's usually data you can find. You might want to know the reputation of those investors. And then you have to really, orchestrate your reach out approach and figure out how to close it. Know really timing. You have to have your arms around valuation levels in that space. You know how to appropriately structure it and negotiate it with on behalf of that company. And I think you'd really need to have that company's management team aligned with you to go execute. I mean, raising money for a company is, for a CEO and potentially other people in the management team, they probably have to dedicate while they're in market let's call it 25% of their time towards doing that raise. And hopefully that can be done in 3 to 6 months for a VC raise. And so they have to be on board for a really intensive lean in effort. And at that point, you're in the market, you're engaging with investors, tracking interest, and ultimately trying to lead to term sheets. And ideally you're in a situation where, you have multiple term sheets, you need to find a lead investor. And by the way, at that stage of a company, if they're already a $500 million kind of stage company, it's quite likely that their pre-existing investors are going to help lead around. So I think that's another fact you'd want to understand. And how are the current investors thinking about the capital stack, valuation levels? What degree of participation do they want in? I think to the extent that large investors aren't participating, I think you also need to understand that really well, because that will be asked really quickly. And to the extent you do have people that are holding back and not investing, I think you'd want to also be in touch with them and understand exactly their reasons why. And and then you want to round out the round with other really strategic investors. I think a lot of the question for the management team, if they have strong demand, is which investors can be more strategic to me, right? Not viewing money as a commodity, viewing it as part of why you're raising money. But I think the right investors today, especially in venture, mid and late stage, it's just as true in early stage too, can be highly, highly strategic to companies. And so I think flipping the script on investors at some point in the process of, all right, we think we'll be fully subscribed or oversubscribed, and really interviewing your investors for what value can they contribute, understanding what kind of a board member are they, what other companies they have that they might be competitive board companies that they're investing in, and what level of comfort you have with those other companies, given they're going to be under the tent with you for the rest of your journey. You'd want to really understand that, understand their timeline for how long do they really plan to stay invested, what kind of liquidity or exit outcome would be okay with them, and all the other factors that would go into a raise. So
yeah. So for, let's say there's somebody with their Series 7 and 63, maybe 79 right now listening, thinking about this. Mm-hmm. Can we just give like a plain vanilla version of like what the fees might look like? Like, hey, standard rates we're seeing in the market are this. Then there's going to be X split with the BD and then X split with the other affiliates. You know, it's probably going to land somewhere between this and this.
Sure. So the first is, what's the fee between the investment banker or the placement agent and the company? And there's such a wide range of different types of fees depending upon deals. I mean, a large debt deal can be as low as, you know, 0.5% to 1% versus an early stage equity raise might be high single digits in cash and potentially warrants. And as you go up into later stage companies, it might be different, you know, lower fees, but larger dollar amounts. And if you're structuring as an M&A transaction, there's a pretty standard range of fees. You'd probably see somewhere in the zip code of 3 to 6% is a pretty standard kind of M&A range. This could go lower, could go higher, depending upon deal various size. Factors. Yeah. And then as a placement agent, if you're raising money for a fund, I'd break it into open-end fund versus closed-end fund. So open-end fund is more of a hedge fund. And typically that's done more as a percentage of management and incentive fees. So relatively typical might be around 20% of management incentive fees. Sometimes you'll see sunsets or step downs based on time period. So after a certain number of years, the fees might step down. As a closed end fund structure, it's typically points paid or earned upfront. So let's say an average of 2%. Of the capital you raise, and that might be spread out over 1 to 4 years. And there's cases where you also might have back-end upside as well, and how that fund performs. So that's how it starts on a gross level, right? The gross fees. Then the next question is, if you're collaborating with somebody on our platform, what's the split you might have? If you originated the deal and other people are participating in it, what might be the split between the originator and the participant? So we're open architecture wherever possible. So starting with the commercial terms between our affiliate partners and their clients, and then between affiliates themselves, we provide all the tools for our affiliates to structure deals however they'd like. I would say a typical range like called 80% of our collaboration agreements, the participants, the person helping execute on the deal, bring investors to the table, close those investors, they would typically earn between 50 and 75% of the gross economics. There's reasons, though, that might be lower. There's certain cases that could be higher. And then the question comes down to the broker-dealer split. So we typically earn between, we have a tiered structure. So people on a normal base structure would get an 85% payout that would scale up to a 95% payout on different breakpoints. And then we would also, we have different structures too, where people can have a higher payout for a higher fixed fee, or we have a monthly fee. So there's toggles there.
So, and what's the, so let's say I'm signing up for this. What's my monthly fees to be on the platform, or how does that get, how does that structure work?
So our base fees are $250 per month. And then if you want a starting payout that's higher than 85%, so like say you want to start at a 95% payout, there's a way to structure it where you can have a higher monthly fee, and there's a handful of factors we can get into on how that monthly fee would vary. Yeah. It's depending on your team size and how much you want to reduce your or increase your payout or reduce Stonehaven's variable fee.
Yeah. You know, I it's evident that you have put so much thought into this, because I think about these deals and, like, I mean, let's face it, tons of money in the US is raised illegally without licensed people and broker dealers and people promising you percentage, not even knowing they're breaking the law of performance-based transaction fees, right? But, like, the first money I ever raised, I was like 22. My mentor had written this movie. He was an employee at DreamWorks and a writer on the side. And he wrote this movie that they got Ricky Schroeder to be the director and Gwyneth Paltrow's agent to say, it's just a super low-budget movie. If you can get the $5 million, she'll be the lead. And then Matthew Fox, the guy from Lost, to be the husband in this Western. Okay. And I was like, oh, hey, I've got a rich uncle, literally. Do you want me to see if he'll give you the money? And my uncle proceeded to no-show the phone call with Ricky Schroeder. I was like, thanks. But I just started, like, I'm like this 22-year-old kid. I just started, everybody I met, I was like, hey, you don't know anybody with $5 million for a Gwyneth Paltrow movie, do you? Ha, ha, ha. And they'd laugh. But every fifth person that would be like, well, I might know this one person. I'm like, you're kidding. Can I meet them? And 6 weeks later, I had the money for them. And ultimately, the Marriott family said that they would fund it at a lower commission, so they can take that money. And then they dragged the fee. Ricky Schroeder got a job at HBO. The movie never got made. Okay. But, like, I was like, you know, I was working at a cell phone store back then. And I was like, holy cow, 6 weeks, I just came up with $5 million. And even though they turned my investor down, like, that was like, whoa, right? Of, I can't believe this is possible. And it really shaped, like, you know, I don't know, the last 22 years of my life since then. And the complications between people and how it's going to work and the order events and the processes are, like, just as hard as selling the investment some of the times. And egos and lack of clarity. Like, the fact that you have that so ironed out and you have, like, a culture amongst these people of, like, and this is how it will be ironed out.
Yeah.
That's so efficient.
Yeah, we're really, so a bunch of things you brought up there. As far as the people who are doing this kind of in the unregulated way, I think that was more the case when I first got in the business in 2000. I think today, pretty much everyone I know who's out raising capital is operating on a broker dealer, or they're part of the company. So they're structured correctly. I mean, are there some players on the side? Yeah, but there's, it's a great way of getting screwed. Because if anything goes wrong, that investor can sue you and pretty much have all kinds of protections because you sold a security illegally. So it's not a smart move.
No, terrible move. I'm constantly, every time somebody new comes to space and they're like, well, you know, cause they know all the people at the podcast. Oh, and I could pay you, you know, we take care of you. I was like, just, you know, not interested, Ed, you actually can't take care of me.
Yeah. And then on the second point, you know, it's kind of interesting how you brought it up. When I first got in the space and started my business, I was 23 years old. And I remember thinking that I had relationships from growing up, that I knew certain people, especially in the Denver real estate scene that I grew up around. And I thought these were going to be my, you know, the people that I thought I could build a capital raising business around, at least initially. And, you know, the funny thing I came to understand really fast was it wasn't the right target demographic. And the right target demographic is usually in any asset class that you're raising money for, there's a massive universe of very, very active investors. And go to where the money's flowing, go to where there's sophisticated players in that space, right? Like in film finance today, there's very well-known investors, and a lot of those are actually more angel. I think film finance, of all things, is very much of a high net worth kind of a business, where an angel investor or LA inside crowd kind of known thing. But everywhere you go, I mean, you know, if you're trying to raise money for real estate, there's, you know, $500 million to $1 trillion worth of LP money out there that directly invest in real estate. Like, figure out who those people are for the right deal, et cetera. And then as far as building best practices for us, I mean, first of all, I think we attract really sophisticated people to our platform. So I think the people coming to our platform in the first place are, you know, quite often leaving a bulge bracket bank, or they're spinning out as an, you know, a partner as a law firm, or they're doing something where they already have a lot of industry expertise. But a lot of, I think, where the things we can add value on is integrating best practices into how all of our workflows exist, and really helping articulate what we think are best practices. We maintain a whole, we call a knowledge base of how we think to do everything. And it's embedded in, like, just as an example, when somebody's forming a new commercial agreement on our platform, they go through a whole commercial workflow of kind of a wizard to form a contract, and embedding at every single step along the way what we think are best practice for terms is key. So, like, people come to a retainer section and having full knowledge articles on what do we think are best practices for retainers? What's the right duration? What's the right amount? How do you structure it? How do you create different mechanisms and alignment to win that retainer? And how do you actually even manage a client relationship that doesn't want to pay a retainer? And what are the right talking points to basically address that? You know, that's like one micro point of one element of raising money, but trying to always say, like, what exactly are affiliates facing? Where can you, how can you get them the right information at the right time? And then supporting those people. I mean, a lot of it's also always, we're constantly on the phone, on Zooms, et cetera, also talking to people. It's not just all tech. So,
yeah. Well, for starters, let's give everybody the website. They want to check it out.
So that's www.stonehaven-llc.com.
And when you think about one of the best pieces of advice you ever received, what's one that comes to mind?
The thing that comes to the top of my mind, I think, is I think having the grit to build something is, I know there's a specific piece of advice, but it's kind of a mentality. As a bootstrapping entrepreneur who's really scaling a fintech business, I think the most important thing is perseverance and the ability to create a vision, but then to overcome just constant setbacks. I think when people see most successful people that have built really large businesses, if you really peel back the layers of the onion and understand their career, it's been filled with constant setbacks and challenges. And I think 80% of the success in being an entrepreneur is really being able to get knocked on your and get up every single day and, you know, gain 5 feet of progress, lose 2, gain 10, lose 3, you know, and just do that constantly. So I think it's a mentality, and it's a just an overall perspective in life and how to build.
It's funny, this kind of like a crude saying, but one of the like SEAL Team 6 or Delta Force guys who was on the show, I think it was, said, ends up there's no silver bullet. I guess we're just going to have to use lead ones.
Yeah.
You know, and like, certainly, you know, I believe in the 80-20 Pareto principle. There are things that have a much higher effect and have higher leverage than others. But, yeah. But this idea that there's an easy way, is, you know, it's a lie that gets sold because it makes money up front. It just doesn't pan out, right?
Totally. And I think the other thing that kind of just comes to the top of my brain, I think, is we set out to go build an operating system in our space and the tech stack and everything we built. it didn't exist at all in the marketplace. And I think a lot of people just didn't get it. And I think there's, to some degree, you want to constantly accept feedback from people in the market and say, I want to build around that feedback. And that is very valuable. And that's something we do every day. I think some of it too, though, is taking a bigger picture perspective on how can you build something that's completely new mousetrap in the marketplace to build something, and really having a multi-year time horizon and just believing in yourself to go do it. Because, you know, quite often if you're going to get such conflicting advice by lots of smart people. Like, I'm in YPO, which is a huge community of a lot of business leaders, incredible advice. But if you ask 50 people in YPO how to accomplish a certain goal, you'll probably get 50 different answers. So at some point you're going to just have to go have your own clear vision and then not waver on how to build it. So I think that's, you know, pretty important in how to build a business too.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I appreciate the time you spent today, and we're definitely going to be talking offline.
Likewise, for sure. Hit me with an email and we'll lock in our next call off the podcast.
I love it. Bye, everyone.